Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, tennis fans from around the globe. The following program is a presentation of the Yellow Ball Network.
Oh, what a shot! Are we on?
Yep, we're on.
All right, let's go.
Broadcasting live from the Tennis Dynamics Studio in downtown Marietta, Georgia, this is the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Your host for the show this week is J.P. Weber.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. I'm your host, J.P. Weber, and we'd love to hear from you. The Yellow Ball hotline number is 646-652-4856. Usually we're on every noon at Tuesday, but I've been making up some shows. This is going to be a Christmas show makeup. The week of Christmas, we didn't have a show. And so I was calling around trying to find some people to do the show, and one of the guys that I always like to get, he works all the time. The guy's, I don't know how old Jack Sharp is. Jack Sharp's our guest this week, but he's getting up there. But he is one of the greatest tennis coaches I've ever had the pleasure of meeting. I think I've mentioned in the past, when I was just starting out, I was looking to go places. I went and sat and watched him teach lessons. At that time, I think Doug Pilot was a really young, just starting out coach for him. So I went to do that. And so later in just a few minutes, we'll have Jack Sharp on the show with us. So our hotline number is 646-652-4856. If you want to call in, please do. If you can't get on now and listen to us now, you can try to download it off of iTunes. It's a podcast. It'll be set up there, and we'll listen to it then. I'm going to head out real quick. I'm going to take a commercial break as fast as I can. We're going to get back. Hopefully, I got a lot of time today I want to spend with Jack Sharp. So we will be right back.
I wake up every morning in a different place and time. I thank God that I can live the way I choose. Though at times the road gets lonely, I can't settle down. I gotta win, 'cause I can't stand to lose. I was born to be a champion, full of dreams and broken bones. God, it ain't an easy life, but it's the one I chose. And I was born to be a champion. I can feel it in my soul, 'cause every time I win, it just keeps driving me on.
Hey, come join us at the Laurel Park Tennis Center for the Marietta Grand Prix Series of Tennis Tournaments. This is J.P. Weber, and the Marietta Grand Prix Series of Tournaments are great opportunities for your kids to get super match play. Match play, lunch, and a chance to earn prizes, all sponsored by the Bryan Brothers Foundation, are all part of these great events. For more information, call 770-919-8602 or find us on Facebook. To register, go to tennisdynamics.net.
Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. I take great pride in calling it the way it is. It's a meat and potato principle of coaching that no one really cares what you know unless they know that you care. As a parent also, I want this and very skilled hands working with my youngster. Coach J.P. Weber's 30 years of experience speaks for itself. Go see him at Laurel Park in Marietta, Georgia. His website is TennisDynamics.net. TennisDynamics.net.
Hi, coaches and players. If you play on a tennis court in the Southeast, you've probably played on a tennis court designed, constructed, lighted, or resurfaced by courtmakers.com. Marshall Dye and the guys at Courtmakers will work on any type of court. From my experience with them, they work in a professional manner, they show up on time like they say they will, and they never leave a mess. Courtmakers can provide for all equipment needs. Call them at 770-795-8400. 770-795-8400. That's courtmakers.com.
This is my kind of town. Chicago is my kind of town. Chicago is.
They were just words. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. Reagan, to Gorbachev at the Brandenburg Gate Berlin Wall, 1987. A chance of rain, the weatherman in Iowa during the 93 flood. Give me liberty or give me death. Patrick Henry, 1775. I wish I'd never read this book so I could read it again for the first time. Dan Trimble, about Hemingway's Old Man in the Sea, 1992. The grass is always greener over the septic tank. Irma Bombach, 1976. We often underestimate the value of words. Good job, son. Oh, that's the best cobbler I ever ate. Did you paint that yourself? I'm really proud of you. Thank you, love. We underestimate the power of words. You shouldn't let that kid beat you. Maybe you ought to lose some weight, huh? You should have tried harder. Not again. They've heard those stories before. You do that every time. There are people whose opinions we truly value. There are people whose praise we die for. And they're often two different things. Sometimes we genuinely would like to improve ourselves. You're letting go of your rope too soon. Give him his head. Don't make a friend. Be a friend. Sometimes we just need encouragement. You did the best you could. Hey, looked like you won from where I sat. Sure runs better after you worked on it. Well, most everyone is the most important person in someone's life. And it is no small responsibility. And it should be a crime if we don't realize and recognize that importance, because what you say can have such a long-lasting effect. I believe you got the makings of a world champion, Ty Murray's mother. I know you can do it, but be careful. James A. Lovell Jr.'s wife. Believe in yourself, Martin Luther King's Sunday school teacher. Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country, JFK. Write about what you know. My college English professor, after giving me an F on a poem I wrote for a class assignment, you'll never amount to anything. Too many of us, too many times. Words, like burrs under a blanket, like nails in a coffin, like a single match in a sea of gasoline.
All right, that's a clip from Baxter Black, a guy I used to listen to on the radio, going places with my dad. He would drive, and he'd be listening to NPR radio. And it's live radio, so my introduction to that clip didn't come up. So there it is, and all the question marks that I'm getting in on the computer and the text, that ought to offer. Baxter Black is a poet and a writer from where I went to college, out in El Paso, Texas. He lives up in Las Cruces, New Mexico. And he sort of reminded me, look, he is a great guy to listen to. If you ever get a chance, the way he cuts through things with the words that he speaks. Coach Sharp is that type of fella. He's a guy that doesn't mince words. And I'm glad to have him. And I'm glad to have presented my 78-foot soapbox this week with that. And let me say, I'll back up here just a second. The worth of our shows and the worth of our talk, it's there. I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and that's why I played that clip. I didn't get the introduction like I wanted it to, and I think this show that I've scheduled with Jack Sharp has gone on about five times today, so hopefully now we've got it, everything's in order. I'm going to check, see, Coach Sharp, are you there? Coach Sharp, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you, Coach. Coach, you probably wondered why I played that clip. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, JP. You're cutting out
okay.
A little bit there. I'm on a cell phone.
All right, am I coming through with you pretty good now?
Yeah, pretty good.
Well, I played that clip because, you know, it reminded me a little bit of you, you know, the guy, you know, just words. There's nobody out there, I don't think, that I've enjoyed listening to. I had you on the show about 2 years ago, and nobody calls it as straight as you do or the way that you do. And the words that we use with developing these kids, they're important, aren't they? Are you still there? Am I cutting out?
Yeah, cutting out a little bit, JP. Go
ahead. Well, okay. How you doing? Let's start with that. Let's try it that way. Are you able to hear me? Can you still
hear
me?
Yep, I hear you, JP.
Okay, I was asking, how are things going for you? Did you hear any of the intro or anything else that we did?
Some of it. I missed it. It's been cutting out pretty good.
It's been cutting out. Okay. Well, I'm glad to have you on. I introduced you as one of the four men who were awarded legendary status as developmental coaches by the USDA. Has that changed you any winning that big award?
No. All I do is still do the same thing I always do.
Well, I get a chance quite often. I'll get on the phone and I'll have a chance to talk with Doug Pilot, and I'm always asking him, he's always explaining, you know, he almost explains things through your way of looking at things a lot of times when I talk, and I find myself agreeing with him all the time.
He's a good guy.
Well, it's been some time. You weren't awarded the last time you were on the show. You weren't one of the legendary coaches in the eyes of the USGA. Now you're a legendary coach. are they doing better? Is the USGA doing better? Or are they? Tell me about what you think is going on with them.
Well, I think the player development department is literally making a real effort to recognize and work with the coaches that actually teach the players. I think that's very important. And I was really happy for the Coaching Legend Award, because they're going to award that every year. I think it's really important for the young coaches coming up to at least be recognized.
But they didn't. None of the guys were young that they recognized.
I think they started off with everybody that's kind of a little bit on the older side.
Well, they may have to go pretty deep to get legendary guys like yourself again. I mean, it'll be interesting to see where they end up this next go round. I guess it's going to become an annual award. You go down, so you're out there quite a bit. You travel. I think people ought to know this. You know, you're about at every USTA meeting that they have, and you're at a lot of the big tournaments, and you're a fixture at those things. But you pay your way to most of these things. Am I right?
I say that again. I missed the last. You cut out just the last bit, JP.
You're at most of the big events and things of that nature, and a lot of times you're there at the invitation of the USTA. But I think in every instance you pay your own way, do you not?
Not every instance. I try to do it mostly because I don't want to take the money for myself away from the money they have to spend on kids.
And part of it keeps it so that you're also able to speak your mind and not feel like, you know, you're beholden to them on any level.
Yeah, that's a factor also.
Well, you're going down. Did you go to Eddie Herr or the Orange Bowl or anything like that?
I went to Eddie Herr, but I had to get back to the club for the Orange Bowl because right away, obviously, is the Winter Nationals.
And when you went down to Eddie Herr, what are you seeing in terms of what do you see out there in terms of the juniors and how they're progressing? Let me develop a little bit. You've got a group with Doug Pilot and guys of that nature coming through, and nowadays, how does it differ from say 30 years ago when you were first going down there?
Well, Eddie Herr wasn't even in existence 30 years ago, but it's maybe 20 years ago, something like that. What I do is I go to the...
Hello? Hello? Oh,
you still there, JP?
I'm here. I got you. I lost
you. Yeah, I just had a little message. It said, thank you for something. This is Something Radio, and goodbye. So, I don't know what's going on there. I go to the terminus for one reason, to see how my kids are doing and where they need to teach them so I know where they have to go next.
What do you see different in terms of, okay, when I speak to people now or when you look at stuff that's written, they talk a lot about the modern game, and it's very, very different, and it's got to be coached very different. And actually, a lot of the guys would say, a fellow like you is a dinosaur. You don't have it anymore. What do you see it that way? Do you look at it? Do you find yourself outpaced by these guys? Do you find things that were true 30 years ago and still true today?
Well, you have to teach very different today because the game is so powerful nowadays with the advent of the new rackets and the strings. Pace and power is a much bigger factor. There's no question about that. You have to hit. You can actually have kids that are just consistent players and even be pro players years ago. I don't even think it's possible anymore.
Do you find yourself, how have you adjusted your coaching?
Well, you have to change everything. I mean, the strokes are different. The way you move is different. The way you condition is different. They even are getting into nutrition so much. I mean, everything's a lot different than it was 30 years ago. 30 years ago, everyone served and volleyed in men's tennis. I don't think you could even win too well serving and volleying anymore.
I remember, and this may be correct, it may be incorrect, I remember early on talking to a gentleman, Don Dickinson, out in Tucson. I was working for Don, and I was asking him about you. There was a call that you were on, and he was telling me, I was asking him how you coached and things of that nature, and he was, I think, one of the original guys that said I ought to go visit you. But he said that you did a lot of counting drills then. You did a lot of stuff. Do you find yourself in this new age of tennis, do you get away from the counting, or does it happen earlier with kids, or how is it important?
Well, you still do counting drills. I mean, every coach that actually produces a lot of players does a lot of that type of work. It's just repetition. And repetition, as Lansdorf said, it's repetition, repetition, repetition. I agree with him 100%. You have to have the repetition to learn this, the basic strokes.
And, you know, you mentioned Lansdorf. A guy like you, you know, you were picked out and you've had – I don't know how many guys and gals to win gold balls. You've had success with people, but you still find it. You'll go and sit and watch a guy like Lansdorf coach. All right.
Oh yes. I still watch coaches all the time. You can never sit still. The game changes all the time and you have to keep up with it. You just sit there and just teach the way you did 30 years ago. You couldn't even develop any players anymore.
I think, you might even – I found, you know, I have a unique opportunity. I get a chance to learn. I'm sort of learning through you vicariously. We'll have a few phone calls here and there, but I learned quite a bit, you know, by talking to Doug. But then I also get a chance to stop by, and I've got a friend, Jerry Baskin. And I find that among the very good coaches, there's a lot of similarities. Do you find that when you, as you go through, you're finding a lot of similarities in the way they coach?
It's amazing how close it is. Sometimes it's scary. I'm always shocked sometimes when I think I've invented something nice and new, and then I go listen to a coach, and there he is just saying it almost in the same words. It's a little scary, to say the least. Very similar.
And it's also in the way that they probably, the way they might run a drill or create a drill session in, under their, they're looking at little tiny things, am I right?
Yes, it's not just the way you run a drill. It's the way they perceive what's going on in tennis now. You get a player, and if you have a certain player, he is capable of doing certain things. And I mean, the coaches will say many similar things to go in the direction they think this player should go. Because all players shouldn't be doing the same thing.
And do you pick up from other coaches' drills as you're sitting there, or do you find yourself doing similar things to say Lansdorf?
I was shocked when the first time I ever saw Robert Teach, he brought out the can on a stick, and you hit for a spot above the net, and he had hit this can. I did do the same drill except I use a cone on top of the stick. I was shocked that he was doing the exact same thing.
And how
there's all kinds of little. There's all kinds of little things that I find that with coaches and produce players that they do that are very similar to what I do.
What makes a guy okay? Let me and maybe you can tell me because it's going to be your eye that sees it. Is it in your eye that you? What is it that makes it so that you can repeat having success with kids once and then again and then again and again? Is it your eye for detail? Is it what do you know the end that you have in mind with each player? Have you done it so many times? What is it do you think that helps you with your success, and it also might help somebody like Lansdorf with his?
Well, I don't put me in the same category as Lansdorf. He's had much more success than I've ever had. But the what I look for is what I do is I make an atmosphere for a kid to grow up on. Now, sure, it's from player to player, it's going to change. But the total atmosphere is something that it's really important where you teach, where the kids can develop their game. And some of the games will be different, very different from another, but they all have that atmosphere, the umbrella that I teach under, that is conducive to making good players.
Is there a sharp umbrella? I mean, are there a few things that you like to see? If they are, can you tell me sort of, can you try and give me an idea of what it is you like to see happen at your with your kids and maybe at a practice or something?
Well, what I like to see, first of all, is they have fun there. If you're a good coach and you run a good program, the first thing you notice is the kids stay there. They like to hang out there, and they like to be a part of it because it's fun for them. And that's the part of the atmosphere that I think is real important.
You know, I talked one time to Bill Wright. He was the former head coach at the University of Arizona. And he said that's the hard part. He said that's actually the real hard part, making it fun, making it interesting for the kids day after day. That's the real work.
I don't even think look at it as work. I don't even change things to make it better. I just try and create something where a kid can develop. And they just, if they do, they stay longer. They actually hang out there. It's like they're a second home because they enjoy doing it and they enjoy being around what it is that you're doing. That's the chief thing to developing players for if you're going to do this more than one at a time.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I heard once Someone told me your definition. I see if I've got one in mind. Somebody told me once your definition of periodization training. You know what it is?
I remember that statement. It was funny. I can't remember what it was, though.
They said that you said one period of their life they're on the court, the other period they're off.
Oh, yeah, I remember that now. I was at a player. USC has used. They have those coaches seminar things where they come, elite coaches seminars, and I was in there. They bring up periodization. I was trying to get across the point that there is no periodization. You just between school and tennis, that's all there is if you're going to be a real player.
Yeah, and it varies the things that you might be doing on the court at the time. It varies quite a bit. I'm going to see if I can. I'd like to see if I can. I understand that you're being inducted into the Chicago Hall of Fame. You know, I tried to find a bio of you. I looked up. We're trying to find a. There's you don't pump your horn or you toot your horn a lot. I couldn't find a real deep bio of you. Where did you grow up? Where are you from originally?
Well, I'm just downstate Illinois in Decatur. That old coach named Dwayne Garver, and he made the atmosphere. I just got hooked on it. I tried to be a real player, but I just was very, not very successful. I went out to California and played, and that was during the, Stan Smith was the big dog then. He was one in the world at the time. And he played out there, but played at the LA Tennis Club. I got to play all the top players, and as far as tournaments, I never got out of the qualifying. So I my career there, and then I was drafted, and that was about the end of it.
And you spent most of your time, most of your time still to this day, you're on the court. How old are you? Can I ask how old are you now?
I'll be 73 in April.
How many hours are you on the court?
Well, at 73, I can't hit the balls with the people I teach very well, so I have someone hit the balls for me. I'm too old to really hit very good anymore. So I'm still out there at least 40 hours a week on the court. Some and then the time you put all the other stuff on there, it's about 50-hour a week job. So it's a lot of hours.
I've got a caller here. Let me bring a caller on. I'm hoping this is a Charleston, South Carolina call.
Hey, JP, how you doing?
Coach Creasy, I'm on the air with Jack Sharp.
And hey, Jack, how are you, Jack?
Hey, Chuck. I haven't talked to you in a while.
Yeah.
JP is one of the guys I really admire in tennis. He says it like it is.
Too much so sometimes, but
Coach, I don't know if you heard my intro. It didn't work out as smoothly as I would like it to. We got a lot of buttons on this dashboard that we run here, but it was a piece by Baxter Black, and it was talking about just words. And you and I banter this back and forth a little bit. We wonder sometimes if the work that we do and the talk that we have on these little shows—that's a little part of what we do as coaches. We're still out there on the court coaching as well, trying to do stuff. But for a good portion of the time. Or at least once a week, we try to put together this radio show. And Jack, I was asking him earlier, and he feels like, what we're doing is of great benefit.
Well, I think so, JP. I mean, you've got a forum that allows people to speak up and to say what they would like to say, and it's a great way that you conduct your program. Because you ask them to speak from the heart and to say what is true. And, Jack's the kind of guy, I've got to give a compliment to, that he absolutely always says what is true and what is, you don't always like, maybe if you were a kid, the tough truth on things, but he doesn't beat around the bush. And, in the long run, that's why kids respect what he's done, but in that true environment, then that's what allows kids to prosper and to. It's not just about feeling good. It's about doing the right things, and then they feel good about themselves. But you know, what a great culture it was for so many years that he's created. But that tape you played was really good, JP. And you know, the work you're doing is really, really important. I think it just gets people talking about stuff, and you know, you can't, you know, put a price on that. That's invaluable.
Well, I think it's I appreciate you. If you'll hang on with us, I'm going to take a real quick commercial break. Come back, and Jack, I'd like to ask you when we get back. I want to ask you about some of the stuff that we talked about originally a couple of years ago, the point system and the 10 and under stuff. And if you can hang on with me real quick, I want to get one more commercial break in, and we'll be right back.
You betcha.
Okay.
I can't think of a better place to go than courtmakers.com for any of my court equipment needs. Any kind of equipment that you need for your club or facility, windscreens, nets, net straps, benches, scoreboards, you can find all of this at courtmakers.com. Or like them on Facebook and see all the latest stuff that they're doing in court construction, resurfacing, and lighting. That's courtmakers.com, courtmakers.com.
Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. All of you know that I take pride in calling it the way it is, and boy, oh boy, is it an exciting time in tennis. The 10 and under stuff, the juniors, the pros, and college. If you want to hear the cutting edge of the real stuff and not just the diluted and watered-down fluff, folks, listen to Coach J.P. Weber on the We Coach Tennis program every Tuesday at noon Eastern Standard Time here on the Yellow Ball Network.
Sharp on the radio with us. If you'd like to call in, the number is 646-652-4856. We do have callers on the line. I hope you'll stay on with us. Coach Sharp, the last time I talked to you, the USGA had sort of rolled out this 10 and under thing, and they had promised we would have 100,000 kids playing tournaments in the 10 and unders. And they are bound and determined to make everyone a believer. And they're bound and determined to tell you that it's success. What do you think? Come on, how's it working?
Well, obviously, all the colored balls and everything—they're nice little gimmicks to get little young kids starting, but to force people to play tournaments with green balls and orange balls and all that stuff—it's just a barrier to entry into real tournaments, and it's killing junior tennis in Chicago. I don't know anywhere else, but the 10-under population has just gone down like a rock, and I attribute it mainly to that. Makes
why?
It very expensive.
Is it overcooked, or what is it? When you say it's almost like an impediment, what do you mean when you say, why is it overcooked?
Why is it a tournament?
No.
It works well just to teach kids basic shots when you're age 5 years old, because you can't do it. They can't swing regular rackets, but to run a tournament with it, they should just be running yellow ball tournaments. I don't believe it helps at all. The people see how much it costs to get up to the yellow ball tournament, because that's what they all want to do. And when they got to pay all that money to play, go through orange and yellow and green and polka dots and everything else, they just drop out. It makes it very expensive to start tennis. Everyone invented this thing for tournaments. They're idiots.
Well, that's why they did it. It's the industry guys that did it, right? I mean, when it comes down to it, it probably wasn't real good coaches.
Well, obviously, I don't know why they keep insisting on doing tournaments this way, because it's just a barrier to entry, and you're just discouraging people from playing tennis. It's ludicrous.
All right, now let me ask you, somebody would say, Somebody would say, you don't use the red, orange, and green, correct, at all?
I don't ever do it. Now, at my club, they use all these colored balls. What I do is I pick good kids out of that group of kids that are playing, and that's where I get my lessons from. Because I start almost all my kids, you know, from very young kids.
So one take on this, and they've thrown this at me, they say, well, you don't use it, so you can't criticize it. I mean, haven't you seen? I mean,
hey, I've been around it. I've been around it from day one.
Right.
I'm teaching on one court, and they might be doing the orange ball on another court, not right next to me. It's not like I'm not familiar with what's going on.
Now, and I have a friend who had the same experience down here in Georgia, and he's at a public facility, and he had to do that, and he had been trained and learned under Jerry Baskin. And Jerry, you know, I remember once going to Jerry, and this kid wanted a graduated racket, and Jerry looked at me and he said, you know, I'm not real high on that graduated length stuff. You know, he is in terms of, you know, you break it down a little bit for the kids, but, you know, to do all that. And so Jerry never really was into it either, but this guy was at a park, and he said he would have 500 balls hit with his kids with the yellow ball and simple, just doing it the old school way, before they had hit 10 balls on the court with the red, orange, and green and the clowns and the polka dot this and the polka dot that. He finds it inefficient, in other words.
I'll make this comment on the all the colored balls. A lot of the coaches that work with that, they're very good at doing it, and they don't produce real tennis players. They're not the ones that are actually producing players. The kids go through that, they go up, get bored with it, quit, and they're out of the game. The people that are really into that stuff, they don't make players.
So most, I found it to a certain degree, the best of the best. And when I say it doesn't mean you can't take a beginner and use them. But a lot of times people want to pigeonhole. They'll say that, you're a high performance coach or something of that nature, and you don't understand how to implement the red, orange, and green. All right. Well, let me ask.
I just want to see the kids that I've noticed that go to stay with that for a long time drop out of tennis. That's what I see. They don't stay with it.
Tell me about, another initiative that sort of came about years ago. I just can't stand it. They call it the points per round system, and they assign points for tournament wins, and it doesn't, you know, they take the best of what, I think it's the best seven results or something of that nature. It's a big departure from the old system. I believe they called it the star system. The points system or the rankings system in the U.S., how do you see that working? Now they've had many years to use it. Do you see it getting any better? Are they changing anything? You had Dr. Russell come out. He was going to change things, and it was going to be better. You watch this stuff pretty closely. Where do you see it?
The point system basically has killed local tournaments. By that fact alone, at least in the sections, they should do head-to-head, do the star system there, because here's what happens. You have kids play, and if you get a good kid, it used to be they could go to it as a local tournament and find other good players to play it, because they would be rewarded first, you know, for wins, because it was head-to-head. But the point system, the kids don't even play these tournaments because there's no points in them, so it's no one plays them. Now, when you don't, and what's the big killer there is a lot of times the better players play these things, you bring up the next level of players that want to get into these tournaments to play them. Now, once the point system doesn't give any points, good players don't play it, the next level doesn't play it, and that may have been the kids that might have been superstars, but they see that there's nothing there in these tournaments, and they just drop out, quit, don't even play tennis. The star system is a much better system than what they got going now in the point system. If they want to screw around the point system, maybe they could do it nationally, which basically our national tournament, it's even killed that. So everyone's trying to get out and play IPF instead. It's really a mess. The whole point system is just worthless.
Well, you know, Coach Creasy was on a few minutes ago, and he's got an idea. I hope I don't spoil anything, but he's got an idea. His next book is going to be something along the last 20%. He says we have a lot of players that are pretty darn good, and we get up to that 80th percentile, that 90th percentile, and we can't quite break, you know, anymore into that, you know, where we got a bunch of people in the top 100 in the U.S. Do you see it the same way he does? First, let me ask you that. Do you see we got a lot of people at this, just a tiny bit off the cream of the crop? We've got a log jam there of players. Do you see that same way?
I agree completely with Chuck on that. When Chuck worked for Clemson as a college coach, he didn't get the number one player to player in the country. He'd look at him around there and find that diamond in the rough that's 20 or 30 or 40 in the nation, maybe even 100. And he'd develop that kid and make a top college team just out of this, from discards of other, you know, places like UCLA. And I always admired him for that. And that's type of player is the player I'm trying to say. You lose that type of player under the point system. They're not seeing the top players. They don't get to play them, so they just drop out and play basketball.
So one of the things that he looks at, or one of the things that he's mentioned, and one of the things that I think, now I don't have y'all's experience, you know, you guys have got the years on me there a little bit, but I've got this intuition. A lot of times I'll talk to you and I figure out, well, that's right. I was thinking in the right way. But he attributes a lot of it to everything's been dumbed down. You know, he talks a little bit about this 10-point tiebreaker. Nothing irks him more, I don't think, I think probably the flipping the coin for the finals, that probably got him pretty good. But this 10-point tiebreaker, one time he described it to me like kissing your sister. Do you see a lot of these things that we're doing with the USGA? Are those the types of things that might be holding our kids back in some way?
Unfortunately, where I think most of this comes from is the competition committee. Now, Chuck's just got on that competition committee. He's got a lot of work there because I've talked to some of those people. They're complete idiots. Their experience in tennis mainly is they played on ladies round robin on Wednesday night, and that's the only real tennis they understand. They're just politicians, and they're really just killing tennis. We're really in a very bad position in the United States for developing players at the moment.
How can we get away? You have the ear of these USTA guys look at you as a legendary coach. You got their ear. How can we get rid of this 10-point tiebreaker? I think that's one of the worst things, at least for me, from a development.
I couldn't agree more. You got to develop tough, hard players if you want. If you want players, you got to develop people who can really compete. And that's the 10-point tiebreaker. It's just pot luck. It doesn't develop top, hard players.
I've got about eight. Believe it or not, I won't be able to get to everybody. I got a couple of people I want to try to get to. I'm going to bring on the 864-918 number. Are you there, caller?
Yes, I am, JP.
Is this Doug Pilot?
Yes, it is.
Well, you've been waiting on hold a really long time. You're one of the longest. I get a thing on here, so I want to get you on, give you a chance to say you were, and I don't know if you heard me at the interim. I said in 1977, you were Jack's first gold ball winner. Is that right?
That's correct.
And your daughter just won a gold ball, so he's had a lot of years of gold balls in there.
Yeah, and actually, and Gianna will say, I'm sure she would. She already told me that it wasn't for Jack at the Nationals. You know, he really he helped her a ton with talks after matches and all kinds of good advice. Just he knows what to say. He knows what to say, when to say it. and knows when not to say stuff. So,
well, let me try. Yeah, let me try. You've been around. What is it about Jack that is unique? What is it that makes him? I mean, what is it that makes him stand apart from other coaches?
Well, what I think, he has an eye. I got to spend a week at Eddie Hearn and a week at the Winter National Film. He has an eye that is just amazing. I mean, he just can see things. And then not only can he see things, but he says things differently, and each kid seems to click differently. And he has a way with kids that they understand. And you can't say the same thing to everybody. And Jack just has he sees things differently and sees kind of the way the kids think, and is able to convey that information. And, you know, it's like I've said a million times, you know, he's done this for so long, he kind of knows what works and what doesn't work. And that's a big, big part of it.
So it's knowing what works and doesn't work. Jack and Doug, you can I'm just curious, is it an eye for detail? Is it detail that he looks at, or what is it that he's looking at? What are you looking at, Jack?
Are you asking me? I would say it's an eye for everything. I mean, sometimes it's very technical. Other times it's very simple. I remember the funniest thing. He was watching Gianna play, and she just was continually hitting balls wide. And I'm sitting there saying, well, you know, do this, do that, come on. And Jack just says, well, she's hitting wide, she's overhitting, that's just stupid. And she kind of looked up and went, what? You know? And then all of a sudden she stopped hitting the ball wide. You know, that would click for her. It may not click for another kid. So, and it was a simple thing. And so I think it's just an eye depending on the kid, the child, what the student needs at that time. After Gianna split sets, Jack would say very little. He would just say one thing. And everybody's got to jump in. The parents got to jump in and say a million things and this and that. Jack would just say one thing. Get under your bag. You need to get more topspin on your backhand. You're missing too many backhands. A little more topspin. He walked away. That was it. She stopped missing backhands in the third set and won. I mean, just simple little things, but it's an eye for able to tell. So you can't say, well, is it technical? Yes, sometimes it's not. It's just very, very exceptional. That's all. That's all I can say. I mean, it's, you know, no question about it.
Jack, do you find, and Doug, hold on with this if you can. Jack, do you find that you got better at this through the years, and it's your eye that you developed, and is that how you see it, the same as Doug?
Pretty much, yeah. That old coaches are probably kind of good at what they do. I mean, if someone has done it a long time, I really admire some of the old coaches. They do develop an eye. I remember Andy Brandy, you know, said to me once. He said, "Jack, you can see it well." He says the player development coaches, they can't see it, and I thought that was kind of funny. But then again, the player development coaches are young guys. I'm an old guy. Old guys do see it better. There's no question of that.
From start to finish, you'll start a player and finish them, start them and finish them, and you've done it so many times. Is it that process of going through starting them and finishing them, in a sense, when I say finish them, it may never be finished, but can you speak to that process just a little bit and what you've learned out of that process?
That's the whole point of it. It is a process. It's, they have to go through different stages, and according to their age and ability, and that's it's pretty. The technical end of it at the beginning is very, very important. As they get older, it becomes less important, and just the way they think about tennis and what they're trying to do and the way they compete. So, strategy is basically. A lot of the coaches are really into that, running patterns and stuff like that. But I find that they just don't develop their own way of playing if you're trying to stop patterns down them and try and make them very work on the strategy. I give them this basic strategy and let them create their own game.
All right, I'm going to take another caller, 210, just in a second. Jack, How would you, are you a tactician? Are you a guy that does a lot with the fundamentals? Are you a strategy guy? How would you describe yourself?
Oh, basically, I'm a tactician. I mean, I basically teach good strokes. I mean, that's basically what it is.
Yeah. Without the strokes.
That's why I've always admired Lansdorf so much, because he's just such a good technician. He just perfect with strokes. I listen to his lessons, and I almost can't find ever one little item that I disagree with.
Yeah. Let me bring on another caller. Caller 210913, are you there?
Yes, I am, JP.
Mr. Lawrence, how are you doing? We're on with Jack Sharp.
Yes. I was going to try and stay off this week, JP, but I started listening, and Jack's just said a lot of things that have really struck home with me. I didn't take notes, so I should have. But I wanted to go retrace them back to the 10 and under thing, because that's become my wheelhouse, so to speak. I didn't want it, but here we are. In the Midwest, I've seen Jack at tournaments. I saw him at the Nationals, and he's always there. So kudos to him. And he said that the 10 and unders and the competition and the tournaments with the 10 and unders is crushing junior competitive tennis in the Midwest. And where's he based out of again? I know it's the Midwest, but I don't know exactly where.
It's Chicago. Chicago area, Hinsdale,
right.
Illinois.
Right, and right now, and I've told JP this, I said there's a lot of good 12-year-olds, who I'm very familiar with, coming, and even 14s, I'm not as familiar with them, but 14s and 12s, coming out of the Midwest right now. If you go to the Nationals, the Midwest can sit there and go toe-to-toe probably almost with California and Florida, I would say. And it'd be a good competition. And for him to say that the 10 and under is now bringing down junior development is ridiculous. And because
the number of 10 and unders is way down.
I'm saying it's sad because it shouldn't happen. I'm in total agreement with you, because here in Texas, we just came through a period of 12s, 14s, now getting into 16s, which was probably the most successful wave of junior boy players that's been around for 30 years. And I've been in Texas for 30 years, so I kind of have a good handle on it. But the USTA wants to sit there and say, oh, well, this 10 and under, red, orange, green, is going to improve the quality of tennis. And what happens is people like you or me or maybe someone in Florida, we don't really sit there and get together and talk about this. But the same thing happened in Texas. So they got the best group of 12, 14, 16s coming through, and then they go down and they get this red, orange, and green stuff because it's going to produce better quality players. Instead of asking the coaches that develop these players, hey, what's going on? And if that's happening around the country, then it's absolutely right. It's not going to pay dividends. So I just wanted to give some feedback on that.
Lawrence, you mentioned that they don't ask them. I still remember this, Coach Sharp. I got to listen in on a conference call back. I think it was 1987. You were on a conference call with Don Dickinson. There was about 10 of you that had banded together, and you guys gave yourselves a name. Don Dickinson called it the Coaches in the Trenches. And at that time, they weren't listening to you then. And you guys have banded together. They're still. Do you think, though, guys, Lawrence, you talked about it, and Jack, I'm curious, you mentioned it. They are doing better, though, in that regard now, correct? Or at least making an effort?
Well, thank you, JP. That's another point I wanted to make. I know you're pressed for time. But if they would get rid of this 10 and under thing, just get rid of it, and what they're doing with Team USA moving forward, I think they'd be on the right track, and there'd be a huge amount of improvement right then and there. The bottom line is the 10 and under rogue tennis does not it's not synergistic with what they're trying to do with 12 and unders, 14 unders moving forward. Anyway, but I think they're doing a lot of good stuff. The 10 and under stuff, there's no way. It's a roadblock for them for what they want to do.
Amen.
So,
like I said, he cuts right to the chase. Well, I mean, the Team USA stuff, Jack. Have they asked you to come in and talk, or how is that functioning from your standpoint?
Is that a question for me, JP?
Yeah.
How is what they're doing help me? Is that the question?
Do you think it's helping tennis? Is it giving opportunities to kids? How do you see it?
What the player development is doing? I don't think it helps at all.
No.
It gives them a little confidence in that they've been chosen, but that's about as far as it goes. But tennis, you have to learn day in and day out, working hard. I mean, you go into a camp once a month, or that doesn't make it.
JP, what you need to do is you need to carve out player development for the past 15, 20 years and carve out what they're doing with this Team USA concept. I don't think it's the same. I don't know if Jack's familiar with them bringing, like, including the local coaches, inviting them into meetings, including them in the training process, actually on the court with the player development coaches and communicating with the coaches. It's two different things in my book. There's USA, you know, Team USA, and then there's player development that's gone on for the last God knows how many years. I think
that's perfectly true. A lot of the real, you got problems with both, but player development, I think, is getting a little better. I think they're getting the idea of what they need to do to some degree. And worry, the real problem is right now is, you know, this the people making the rules up in the competition committee, and that's just hopeless.
And so
I have this show. There's other shows. Chuck's got his show. They don't listen. You get to talk to these guys. You say they hear some of this stuff. What could help to flip the switch a little bit more? Is it good that we put the pressure on? Is it good we talk about this? Is it good that, you know, I give you a voice and, you know, Doug a voice and Chuck a voice and all the Lawrence a voice and these people across the country? What is it that we need to do to keep the pressure on? Because, you know, I got one coming up. I got a little guy that I'm real interested in seeing do well, I'm hoping. I hope it's a nice, fertile ground for him.
Well, basically what they got to do is give people freedom to develop tennis in their own unique way. And they don't quite get that. Everything the USTA does is they force something down your throat. And that turns people off. And for development, it's just like it's a killer.
Wow,
that's the most important thing.
You know, it's funny. I feel that. I don't know, Doug. Are you on there too? I mean, and Lawrence, you can react to that too. That's one of the things that I think is at the essence of this, and what he just said. It seems to me if there's an environment where people have the freedom to do it where they think it's best, and to get a little support in that, I think that's probably one of the best things they could do. But I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, yeah, they're control freaks.
What do you think, Doug?
At the end of the day, it's working or it's not working. You've either produced players or you haven't produced players. That's all. That's what it comes down to. I mean, it's no joke. Look, if Jack Sharp was a heart surgeon, or the guy who went to Stanford, got all A's, got out of school, and after 5-6 years, told me how, you know, he was going to do heart surgery on me, and he had all this fancy talk and all this fancy stuff. I'm sorry. You're going to cut me open. I want to see 1,000 other people you cut open and the results. That's the end of it. I mean, that's just the bottom line. They either have produced players or they haven't. And if they have, I want to know. I want them working on my kids, or I want them their information for my students. I want to know how they did it. You know what I mean? So that's what it should be. That's if they really, truly, people want to produce players, you go to the coaches that are producing players, and you say, you know, people ask me, well, what's the deal about these old coaches? You know, why do you think? Well, it's no different. I think you have to have so many years behind you. I don't think young coaches, it just takes too much time to be good at something. And that's coaching, and that's anything. So, you know.
It's that process that you go through 100, 200, yeah. 300, yeah. 400, 5,000 times.
Absolutely. If Jack did 1,000 surgeries and they all died, I probably wouldn't go to Jack. You know what I'm saying? but, you know, so you can't just go, well, he's done 1,000 surgeries. I mean, I want to know some results. And obviously that's what the anybody in business, that's what I haven't had a chance to sit down with Lawrence and say, you know, how'd your brother do it? I mean, how'd you do it? I mean, so at the end of the day, that's how you get there. You know, I mean, you know, that's what I think. I think that the player, I think they're trying to do that more. I hope they are. That if they're really serious about player development, ask the coaches, listen to the people that are producing the players, not the guys with the fancy videos on TV, YouTube, pulling them up. All the, you know, I watch a ton of videos. Some of them are great. Some are, you know, I don't think are great. But at the end of the day, are these people producing players? That's it. That's the bottom line. I mean, the guy that's teaching J.C. Roddick, does he have a lot of players? Has he produced players? You know, okay, then let's listen to him. You know, I mean, that's how I see it. I think it's pretty simple. I see it as very simple.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned that there's a clip of Chuck, and Lawrence was there. I don't know if Lawrence saw the clip, but it was Creasy talking, Coach Sharp. He was talking to this at this high school coaches thing, and he said, you know, he grabbed the racket. He stood up, and somebody asked him about the 10 and under stuff, and he said to him, he said, I don't care if you teach with this end of the racket. And he was holding it at the head and swinging and trying to hit the ball with a handle. And he said, it's up to you to create a following. It's up to you to create it's up to you to, you know, to get kids to be successful. And I think that's what Doug is saying. Coach Chuck, let me give you the last word here today. I know you want to get back to that national championship football game. So I didn't even know. I was excited.
Yeah.
I didn't even know. What will work going forward? Do you think you could ever let them have it? You know, they back off a little bit. They let the local coaches help, and then will they come back and just usurp too much? What happens? Why do they not listen to the local coaches? Why do they not listen to, not really the local coaches, but the successful developmental coaches? Why do they leave them behind?
They don't understand the concept of making an atmosphere. They don't understand what it takes. You got to have the right atmosphere for a kid to develop, and they don't understand that basic concept.
Well, I hope something comes along. I'm going to have to – it's late here. I'm going to have to run. I'm sorry to run so early. You know, having you on, I could stay on another 2 hours with you. But I know you and I both have stuff to do tomorrow. You've got to get back on the court tomorrow, and I've got to do quite a few things. So I'm going to let you go this time. I'd love to have you back on again. I've told you before I'd like to get some sort of roundtable thing. Would you be interested in doing that?
You betcha. Anything else, Dennis?
Coach, I enjoyed it. Thank you very much for coming on. And we'll catch you again soon. I hope to see you. I hope to be up there in Chicago and see you soon.
Okay, JP. Talk to you later.
This has been the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Check in here with us every Tuesday at noon and listen to another great coach talk about what makes their program a success.
No doubt about it.